The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, the last show of the week. Thanks to Andrew Locher for filling in on yesterday's program, a busy time for us on both sides of the pond with the end of the college semester coming at us today. And, of course, the students have all of their final exams scheduled for next week. The week after that, we have the start of the ministerial conference in Edmond. So lots of exciting events, lots of things to keep track of. And then, as we'll see here today, just so much going on in the news as well. Theresa May, she hangs on. She hangs on after the vote on, I guess it was Wednesday, but it's not much of a victory. The Telegraph writes here this morning, so what now? So what do we do now? She staggers on. Badly damaged after this massive rebellion, the Telegraph refers to. And so what's the future like for Britain? Just leaving aside politics for a moment. The Telegraph says that this is a major change, but it is also the only real difference to where we were 24 hours ago. Well, I'm picking it up in the middle of a thought, but it says further, the narrowness of her victory means that she has hardly been imbued with superpowers. If she continues to try to thwart a meaningful Brexit, her pro-Brexit MPs will make life almost impossible for her. She will still not be able to govern in any meaningful way. Her administration will effectively disintegrate, and she won't be able to pass any legislation at all. Party members, donors, and leave voting public will be in an uproar, and one or more new political parties will undoubtedly be launched. It says later on in the piece that most of the backbenchers voted against her, but she has managed to survive. UK politics on the whole, however, will remain in a nosedive, the Telegraph says. And it just talks about the disarray that the political scene is in right now. And again, you just can't help but to think about that March 1973 Plain Truth, where Herbert Armstrong gave this sobering warning. He said, Britain's going to look back on January 1st, 1973, in all probability, as a most tragically historic date. That would be the date they joined on with the European Union project, a tragically historic date, a date fraught with ominous potentialities. We talked about that earlier this week. That was the day, January 1st, 1973, that the UK entered into the European Union, or at that time it was called the European Community. But look at these ominous potentialities. Today they are reality, as we keep saying. Look at what's happened since the 2016 Brexit vote. Look at how much it's harmed and divided the country. Well, it's not the vote itself. It's the attachment to the union. And then now the process of trying to get out. That's really why Theresa May is even in office in the first place. That's how she came into office in 2016. Her political life, her career politically, it revolves around Brexit. And look at how difficult it's turning out to be. Well, that same article, as we pointed out at the London Pack, that 1973 article by Herbert Armstrong, he wrote in that same piece about the now forming Holy Roman Empire, the seventh and final resurrection of that Holy Roman Empire. That empire is forming. Britain is going to find itself on the outside, as we have said so many times. All of this in fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Lots going on in the deep state across the Atlantic with the United States. Quite a few bombshells just in the last 48 hours or so. I talked on Wednesday's program about why the government targeted Mike Flynn. We went back through some important history, his falling out with the Obama administration, and then they really had it in for him. The Obama administration, Obama's deep state, they went after Mike Flynn, and that's becoming more and more clear with each passing day. On Tuesday of this week, his attorneys, Mike Flynn's attorneys, they filed what's called a sentencing memorandum. They're going before a judge, and the judge is going to determine how long or what his sentence will be. And as we've already noted on this program, Bob Mueller has suggested no jail time because of his military career, his faithful service to the country. But in this this sentencing memorandum filed by his lawyers, quite a few conservative outlets focused in on footnote 23, which is on page 9 of this document, and I'll read from a little bit from that document in just a little bit. But this this footnote refers to a 302 interview. When the FBI gets done with an interview, it files what's called a 302, and so this interview about the conversation that these two agents had with Mike Flynn on January 24th, 2017. Those two agents, one of them was Peter Strzok. We know all about him and his hatred for the Trump administration. But the bombshell revelation is that this 302 summary, which a lot of people in Congress have wanted to get their hands on, this summary was written on August 22nd, 2017. So almost a full 7 months after the interview, which would have been highly unusual, two FBI agents interviewing Mike Flynn, and then they write a summary about it 7 months later, 7 months after the fact. Now, the problem with this, as some have pointed out, is that there are text messages between Strzok and his paramour, Lisa Page, that indicate that there was a 302 put together or a summary written within days or at the most 2 weeks following the interview, following the conversation on January 24th, 2017. This is just 4 days into the administration of Donald Trump. And according to these text messages, they were working on the 302 then. Now, additionally, James Comey, in his testimony last Friday, this is the one where he said, I don't know, something like 250 times. Well, in this case, he actually did know a little something. He referred to a 302 that he read or that he was briefed on regarding the interview with Mike Flynn. He talked about it in his testimony last week. Now, the thing is, Jim Comey was fired on May 9th, 2017. So this 302 summary that's footnoted in the sentencing memorandum says that this 302 was written on August 22nd, 2017. Comey was fired. He was fired 2 or 3 months before that. And then he testified last week that he had read a 302. So either there's more 302s out there about the Mike Flynn interview that we haven't yet seen, or they were changed along the way. It'll be interesting to see if more documents turn up. Now, that's what sort of led up to the judge. His name is Judge Emmett Sullivan. On Wednesday, that's what led up to him essentially telling the Bob Mueller Special Counsel Office that he wanted all the 302s, plural, all of them, that were relevant to Michael Flynn's interview before he sentences Flynn. I think he put a 3 p.m. deadline on it today. So he wants every single 302 that has to do with Mike Flynn submitted to the court today. Now, let me just take you through some of the details. I don't want to get too much into the legalese here, but this is from that sentencing memorandum. And this is basically Mike Flynn's lawyers saying, look, he's confessed to a false statement. He's willing to accept the punishment, whatever that might be. But we just want to present some additional facts here so that the judge knows, so that you know how that this transpired, how that this came down. So this memorandum, it says that on January 24th, 2017, it was about 12:35 p.m., early afternoon, General Flynn, he receives this phone call from the then deputy director of the FBI. That was Andrew McCabe. So McCabe calls him on a secure phone line. And as this memorandum brings out, General Flynn had for many years been accustomed to working in cooperation with the FBI on matters of national security. So he didn't think that this was unusual. Nothing suggested that this was unusual or that he was about to be interrogated, or I guess a better word would be entrapped. It says, General Flynn, well, I read that. He and Mr. McCabe briefly discussed a security training session the FBI had recently conducted at the White House before McCabe, by his own account, stated that he felt that we needed to have two of our agents sit down with General Flynn to talk about his communications with Russian representatives. So McCabe suggests a sit down. McCabe suggests that these two agents talk to General Flynn about some of his communications with Russian representatives. And according to McCabe, this is his account of what went down that January of 2017. He says, I explained that I thought the quickest way to get this done was to have a conversation between General Flynn and the agents only. I further stated that if Lieutenant General Flynn wished to include anyone else in the meeting, like the White House counsel, for instance, that I would need to involve the Department of Justice. General Flynn stated that this would not be necessary and agreed to meet with the agents without any additional participants. Well, now we know that that was a huge mistake. But at the time, he just thought, hey, they want to brief me on some of the conversations I've had with Russian officials, then come on over. Come on over to the White House. And so they did. Peter Strzok and another agent who's not named in this document. Now, as you probably saw reported yesterday, according to these agents, these two agents, and this is where the footnote comes in, footnote 23, the 302 dated August 22nd, 2017, written 7 months after the meeting. And according to that document, according to these agents, General Flynn was relaxed and jocular. He even gave them a tour of the White House, a tour of the West Wing. And this memorandum says the agents did not provide General Flynn with a warning of the penalties for making a false statement. Before, during, or after the interview, they didn't warn him going in. They didn't tell him while they were talking to him, now look, you better make sure you're telling the truth. And they issued no warnings after the fact either. It says, prior to the FBI's interview of General Flynn, Mr. McCabe and other FBI officials decided the agents would not warn Flynn that it was a crime to lie during the FBI interview because they wanted Flynn to be relaxed. And they were concerned that giving the warnings might adversely affect the rapport, one of the agents reported. So they wanted a good rapport with General Flynn. They wanted him to be relaxed. I guess my question is, why? Why do they need him to be relaxed? Why would they need him to let his guard down? Why would they need this kind of friendly banter? Well, that was important to them. Evidently, that's what the agents reported. We decided not to warn him that some things that he said could be held against him. Because, well, we were hoping to get him to relax. It says, before the interview, FBI officials had also decided that if Flynn said he did not remember something, they knew he said. See, they had reviewed the transcripts of those phone calls with Kislyak, the Russian ambassador. They had the transcripts probably nearly memorized. And this is according to the sentencing memorandum, based on the 302, filed 7 months after the fact. It says, before the interview, FBI officials had also decided that if Flynn said he did not remember something they knew he said, they would use the exact words Flynn used to try to refresh his recollection. If Flynn still would not confirm what he said, they would not confront him or talk him through it. They wouldn't help him out one bit. They wouldn't try to refresh his memory. They wouldn't indicate that they knew what the transcript said word for word. It says one of the agents reported that General Flynn was, quote, unguarded during the interview and, quote, clearly saw the FBI agents as allies. Sure, come on over. Anything that we can do to be of assistance. Come on over to the West Wing. Hey, I'll show you around. That's from the Flynn sentencing memorandum, which, as I say, now raises a lot of questions. Why was the 302 written in August instead of in January or February, early February? Let's just go back to that day, January 24th. That's the day of the interview. And then the day before, this is from the Washington Post. This is January 23rd, 2017. This is the story that ran the day before McCabe called General Flynn and said, hey, we need you to speak with a couple of our agents if it's okay. And I would suggest that there be no lawyers there. And yeah, that would make it easier. Otherwise, I'll have to get the DOJ involved and it'll be kind of messy and you know what I mean. And so here is this information leaked to the Washington Post the day before the interview. It says here, the FBI in late December reviewed intercepts of communications between the Russian ambassador to the United States and retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, national security advisor to then-President-elect Donald Trump, but has not found any evidence of wrongdoing or illicit ties to the Russian government, U.S. officials said. So this is common knowledge now. The first leak was on January the 12th, David Ignatius. He gets the tip from the deep state that, hey, Mike Flynn has been having conversations with the Russian ambassador, and it was before the president was inaugurated, so we're kind of wondering if it's in violation of the Logan Act from 1799. That obscure act that we talked about just the other day. I won't get into that here again. But this is right at the start of the article, saying that they had intercepted these calls and that they had not found any evidence of wrongdoing or illicit ties to the Russian government. So this was perfectly normal. This was perfectly normal activity for a transition team that's preparing for running a government. No wrongdoing in Kislyak, no wrongdoing with Flynn. That's what the Washington Post said. It says the calls were picked up as part of routine electronic surveillance of Russian officials and agents in the United States, which is one of the FBI's responsibilities, according to the U.S. officials, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss counterintelligence operations. This, according to the U.S. officials, whoever's leaking this is normal. Electronic surveillance of Russian officials. That while that might be normal, what's positively abnormal is for General Flynn to be unmasked and then leaked to the public, as is what happened January 12th. Then again, more and more information comes out. This is on the 23rd. The Washington Post says here, nonetheless, the fact that communications by a senior member of Trump's national security team have been under scrutiny points up the challenge facing the intelligence community as it continues its wide-ranging probe of Russian government influence in the U.S. election. So there's the news media saying that there is this wide-ranging investigation, this counterintelligence investigation, and it's tricky here Because what if some of Trump's officials are involved in it? Well, we now know, we knew back then, really, that there was no collusion. And the media and so many others in the deep state, they've now moved on to other things. Obstruction of justice, what's the latest? The campaign finance violations, those kinds of things. We'll spend a little more time on that later. But this Washington Post piece, this is a leak, a strategic leak. There is a reason that this was leaked the day before that meeting between General Flynn and Peter Strzok and another FBI agent. The Post says, although Flynn's contacts with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak were listened to, Flynn himself is not the active target of an investigation. That's what the Washington Post reported the day before this meeting. So you want to talk about doing everything possible to completely set him at ease, to get him to let his guard down. They were working with the news media as well. There's your collusion, more collusion between the deep state and the major media. Here's the Washington Post the day before he gets the call from McCabe saying that he is not the target of an investigation. In fact, he was. It's a very similar exchange as was there between Jim Comey. Remember, it was those meetings in January. This is the same month, the first month, when Donald Trump was asking Jim Comey, who was then heading up the FBI, look, am I under investigation? And Comey said to him, no, you're not. Well, would you tell the American people that then? Aren't we on the same team here? Aren't we working together? But oh no, they were under investigation. Flynn was under investigation. Donald Trump's administration was being spied on. And this is the way they went about it. They illegally unmask General Flynn with respect to these conversations, which, as Devin Nunez said recently, this is the worst security breach he's seen in Washington, to reveal that kind of information to the whole world. This is what we do. This is how we spy. This is what we keep tabs on. It says the FBI's counterintelligence agents listen to calls all the time and do not pertain to any open investigation, current and former law enforcement officials said. Often, said one former official, they're just monitoring the other side of the call. The foreign official, that is. They minimize the U.S. official. He's supposed to be masked. That's the law of the land. And to not do that or to unmask them is a felony. It says both Flynn, a former head of Pentagon's intelligence agency, and Kislyak, a seasoned diplomat, are probably aware that Kislyak's phone calls and texts are being monitored, current and former officials said. That would make it highly unlikely, the individual said, that the men would allow their calls to be conduits of illegal coordination. So they would have known, and Flynn would have known. Flynn would have known they monitored the calls, but he didn't have anything to hide. And then the agents call up, or McCabe calls up and says, hey, can we send over the agents? And he says, sure. I don't need to have a lawyer present. He thought he was going to be briefed. He was heading up NSA, or the security advisor, I mean. He was the president's security advisor. So then the next day, the day after this article appears, then comes the ambush, and they go after this man, a former paratrooper, an Army Ranger, an intelligence officer, a three-star general. They go in to take him down. They don't tell him about the word-for-word transcript that they have memorized. They don't tell him that they're going to try to find any and every inconsistency possible. But that was the objective. Listen to what Jim Jordan, he's in the House of Representatives, he said this last night on Fox News, clip 5.
Mike Flynn ran the Defense Intelligence Agency. He had to know his conversations with Kislyak were being listened to, were being monitored. So he had to know that. There's no reason for him to come in there and say something that wasn't true. He just got caught because he didn't know they were setting him up like they did. And so Judge Sullivan demanding these documents is exactly what needs to happen.
And that's in reference to the judge on Wednesday saying, look, I want to see some of these other 302s if they're floating around. But going back to what he said there about Mike Flynn, he got caught because he didn't know that they were setting him up. He did not know that it was a setup. You look at the booklet, America Under Attack. We've talked before about the parallels between what happened in the Worldwide Church of God following the death of Herbert Armstrong and what you see happening here on a national scale, this trend toward lawlessness, this deadly trend. And my father said in that booklet that it's just going to get worse. And that's what we're seeing with each new revelation. And good for the judge to say, I want to see the documents. I want to see what was actually said. I want to see if there's an older 302. I want to see if the 302s contradict each other. In America Under Attack, my father said, we must open our eyes to recognize the evil spiritual force that is behind this push to undermine the law. That's what we're seeing happen here. A push to undermine the law. He had no idea that he was being set up. He had no idea that they were entrapping him. Listen to Jim Comey on MSNBC. He's out there. Of course, when he's in before Congress, he doesn't know. He doesn't know. To the tune of hundreds of times, I don't know. And then you get out in MSNBC, you get out in friendly territory. He knows a lot, we find out. He sits down in like a town hall setting and talks with MSNBC for over an hour. And listen here to what he said about Mike Flynn and his problem and his lies. This is clip one.
What did you think when you found out that the National Security Advisor designee was lying about conversations with the Russian ambassador?
Why is he lying?
Do you know the answer?
I still don't know the answer to that. So, again, I have a limited vantage point, but it was clear that he was lying, that he lied to two FBI agents on the 24th of January in the Situation Room in a conference room, and it was clear that he was lying.
It was clear that he was lying, he said last weekend. Now, Andrew McCabe, earlier this year, he said that the two people who interviewed Flynn didn't think he was lying. That's his testimony. Now, they're all liars. Who do we believe? But if McCabe is right about Strzok, if Strzok went away from that meeting thinking that, well, he's not lying to us, then how is this happening? And why the 302 7 months later? And here's Comey out on the circuit again. It's clear. It's so clear that he was lying. And so he needs to be prosecuted. That's the approach that they take with their political enemies, with their allies. Well, it's very different, as Comey said on The View last year. I guess it would have been last year. That's right, clip 10.
Good people lie. I lay out in the book, I think I'm a good person where I've lied. I still believe Andrew McCabe is a good person, but the inspector general found that he lied.
Okay, so Andrew McCabe, he's a good person. He lies, but he's good. And Jim Comey, he lies, but he's good. General Flynn, however, the 33-year Army veteran, 33 years of service, serving his country, drawing a meager salary, now fighting for his life, selling his home so he can pay his lawyers, to defend against this. Jim Comey's out selling books, making millions. Is this justice now in the United States of America? These are third world tactics. This is the KGB. This is how the KGB operates. Listen to what Comey went on to say in that interview with MSNBC, clip two.
You look at this White House now, and it's hard to imagine two FBI agents ending up in the sit room. How did that happen?
I sent them.
Nice, big laughs. Yeah, how did this happen? How did you just waltz right into the White House with two FBI agents and expose this lie? Well, I just sent them. I just sent them, he says. And then the friendly MSNBC audience, they all laugh. They enjoy it. He wouldn't have gotten away with this in other administrations. That's what he told the same audience. Clip three.
Something I probably wouldn't have done or maybe gotten away with in a more organized investigation, a more organized administration, in the George W. Bush administration, for example, or the Obama administration. The protocol, two men that all of us have perhaps increased appreciation for over the last 2 years. And in both of those administrations, there was process. And so if the FBI wanted to send agents into the White House itself to interview a senior official, you would work through the White House counsel, and there'd be discussions and approvals and who would be there. And I thought, it's early enough, let's just send a couple guys over.
And so he sent over Strzok and his FBI agent, Buddy. And they didn't warn General Flynn. They got around the process because they were working against the administration. Donald Trump was the enemy. He still is. And so never mind the process that's typically there. Never mind the fact that this is something he couldn't, to use his words, he couldn't have gotten away with under the previous administrations. But with this one, he could. It was 4 days into the administration. He thought, well, I'll send a couple of guys over. And he did it. And Andy McCabe, he was on the phone with Flynn and said that, hey, nothing to worry about here. We don't need to get this messy with attorneys. We want to set you at ease. This was the thinking at the FBI. We wanted them to let the guard down. General Flynn, he came away from the discussion thinking that well, surely these are our allies. These are agents who are on our team. I'm now the national security advisor. This is the FBI. We're all Americans. We're working together. Listen to what Jim Jordan said about that comment, that he wouldn't have gotten away with it. This is clip four.
When you say I got away with something, that just tells you you didn't do it the right way. You didn't do it. You didn't follow the rules. You didn't do it the way you were supposed to. They were so focused on getting President Trump, that they were willing to set up a lieutenant general, a guy who served our country, as you said, 33 years. So that's the most egregious part of this, what they did to General Flynn.
That's the most egregious part, the fact that it was all a setup from the very beginning. And look, this may seem like a little thing. This is what triggered the special counsel. Remember James Comey? He came away from a meeting later on in early February 2017. And what did the president say? He said, well, I hope you can let this thing go with General Flynn. Now, the Washington Post had reported that he wasn't being investigated. And then the president comes along and basically says, look, leave him alone. Leave General Flynn, leave him out of this. He's a good man. He was a target from the very beginning. Well, the president says that to Jim Comey. This was before his firing. And Comey, of course, takes that to mean obstruction. Obstruction of justice. He's trying to obstruct justice. And then it was Comey's firing in May that led to those leaks. Comey was the leaker. It was all a setup. It's all a hoax. It's been a hoax from the very beginning. And the more you get into this, like my father said, in Great Again and America Under Attack, the more you see just how lawless the deep state really and truly is. The Wall Street Journal yesterday, this is the editorial board at the Journal. Now we learn from Mr. Flynn's court filing to the sentencing judge that senior bureau officials acted in a way to set him up for the fall. This is not some obscure conservative website. This is the Wall Street Journal editorial board saying that they set him up. Not a rich man, after decades in uniform, Mr. Flynn pleaded guilty to avoid bankruptcy and spare his son from becoming a legal target. If you don't confess, we're going after your son. This is what passes for justice in the United States today. The Journal says the FBI agents had seen transcripts of Mr. Flynn's conversations with the Russian ambassador that were unmasked by Obama administration officials. The 302 says that rather than flag this and ask Mr. Flynn for an explanation, the FBI agents decided before the meeting that if Flynn said he did not remember something they knew he said, they would use the exact words Flynn used to try to refresh his recollection. If Flynn still would not confirm what he said, they would not confront him or talk him through it. They'd just hold on to it until they needed it. In this case, many, many months later, when Bob Mueller reopened it and found, whoa, hang on a second, he lied. He lied to our FBI agents. The Journal says, keep in mind, the FBI's counterintelligence probe into Russia and the Trump campaign was still secret. Mr. Flynn had done nothing wrong in conversing with the Russian ambassador. It was part of his job, and he had no reason to believe he was in legal jeopardy. He initially claimed he misremembered what was discussed, which is more believable than that a highly decorated officer would lie to FBI officers he agreed to see without counsel. Well, it's good to at least see one judge who puts his foot down and says, all right, you cite this this August 2017 302. I want to see the other ones. I want to see the ones that you haven't turned over. Anything and everything involving General Flynn. Molly Hemingway, she writes at the Federalist. And last night she had this to say on Fox News regarding this judge, Emmett Sullivan, clip 6.
Emmett Sullivan has a reputation for wanting to know that the government has done everything by the book. He was the judge who had problems with the Ted Stevens prosecution.
Right.
And I think there's reason to be suspicious about what happened here. I mean, nothing seems to have been done in the way that you would hope that the Justice Department would be doing things if they wanted to hold everyone equally accountable to the law. I mean, one of the things that hasn't even been brought up here that I think is interesting is they leaked to the Washington Post the day before they went to interview him that he was totally out of trouble. And I think that sounds kind of suspicious that they were doing this on the eve of calling him up and saying, hey, do you mind if we come over and talk to you? Because it made him feel like this was not a perjury trap, that this was not an investigation into him. In fact, they had been actually surveilling him for years, and they were definitely trying to ring him up on a perjury trap.
Surveilling him for years and trying to get him caught in a perjury trap. This is what happened to him. She mentioned Ted Stevens there, this judge, and his involvement with that case something like 10 years ago. This was a Republican senator that the FBI and the DOJ, the FBI at that time was headed up by Bob Mueller. He has reappeared. He's back trying to frame other individuals. You go back and look at that Ted Stevens case. Here was a senator who was framed by the DOJ and the FBI. He was framed and he lost his Senate seat. And Obama gained a supermajority in the Senate, 60 senators early on in his presidency. Judge Emmett Sullivan, he came around later, again, during this sentencing process, and demanded that the FBI turn over documents. I want to see how you took this man down. I want to see all the facts. And it turns out, that Ted Stevens was completely exonerated. But he didn't get his seat back. He wasn't restored to his original position. It's all politics. We got to do whatever we can to take him down. If you look at all of these tactics, if you look at the strategy here, if you look at what they're going after, who they're going after, and all these criticisms aimed at Donald Trump, everything that they're accusing him of, they themselves are guilty of: abuse of power, collusion with Russia, an obstruction of justice, erasing 33,000 emails, or to take a more recent example, the missing text messages from Strzok and Page. The inspectors general went after those iPhones to try to find the ones that are missing. As it happens, well, they've already been reformatted and given to other agents, other FBI agents. It's just standard protocol. Wipe the hard drive out. They learned this from the Hillary campaign. Wipe out the hard drives, reformat it, and then the text messages disappear. Well, we needed those messages. Oh, don't worry. We looked at all the messages, and none of them really were applicable to any of these investigations. None of them apply. So they decide. They decide who's right, who's wrong. They decide who gets prosecuted, who doesn't. Here, going back to General Flynn, here he's had these contacts with Russian officials. You have all of these insinuations in the press. Well, he talked before Donald Trump was actually inaugurated. And then, I mean, even the fact that there is any kind of a discussion, and considering we're in this counterintelligence investigation about Russian meddling in the election, should you even be talking to a Russian? All of this insinuation, and we get to this point today, and what do we have? We have Mike Flynn, who's guilty of misstating something in a perjury trap, a process crime, a crime that has, and you have to put crime even in quotes, a crime that has nothing to do with Russia, that has nothing to do with collusion, that has nothing to do with obstruction of justice. And meanwhile, the media, it's like a fourth branch of government, the deep state together with the deep media, totally colluded, in bed with one another. And now they've since moved on, at least for the time being, they've moved on from Russian collusion to campaign finance violations. And the president, and he's oftentimes the only one, he's out there trying to defend himself against more accusations. This is what he said yesterday in an interview, clip 8.
Nobody, except for me, would be looked at like this. Nobody. What about Congress, where they have a slush fund and millions of dollars is paid out each year? They have a slush fund. Millions. They don't talk about campaign finance or anything. Have you ever heard of campaign finance lists? Have they listed that on their campaign finance sheets? No.
And he went on in the same interview talking about all of the campaign finance violations of the Obama administration, something like 10 times the amount. And of course, this wasn't even a campaign violation. This was the president paying off this woman to keep her mouth shut. And the lawyers, the prosecutors, they say that's a campaign violation. And, now that Michael Cohen has pleaded guilty to that crime, it's obviously a crime. Well, he's pleaded guilty because they flipped him. It was all part of the plea deal. Prosecutors, Byron York says yesterday, prosecutors investigating President Trump made big news Friday. This was last Friday. But it wasn't about Russia. Rather, in their sentencing recommendation for fixer Michael Cohen, lawyers and with the U.S. Attorney and for the Southern District of New York wrote that in the final weeks of the 2016 campaign, candidate Trump directed Cohen to pay off Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, who wanted money to keep quiet about sexual dalliances. While such arrangements are legal, prosecutors argued that since the payoffs occurred during the campaign, they were violations of campaign finance laws. Let me just read that again, that last sentence. while such arrangements, these are non-disclosure arrangements, which are quite common, while such arrangements are legal, prosecutors argued that since the payoffs occurred during the campaign, had it been any other time, it's totally fine. But since he did it during the campaign, they were violations of campaign finance laws. And so he needs to go to jail. Michael Cohen needs to go to jail, and Donald Trump needs to go to jail. The Wall Street Journal yesterday had an article about the Trump inauguration spending. That now is under criminal investigation. How they spent the inauguration money. That's a big expose. Over at the Journal, the New York Times, for its part, says the inaugural fund and the super PAC that supported Donald Trump, they're scrutinizing that for illegal foreign donations. Foreign donations to the inaugural fund. And then this from the Daily Beast. It says here, in court filings due to drop in 2019, prosecutors will unveil Middle Eastern countries' attempts to influence U.S. politics. Over the past year, the indictments, convictions, and guilty pleas have largely been connected in one way or another to Russia. Well, that's even a stretch. But it says, but now Special Counsel Robert Mueller's office is preparing to reveal to the public a different side of his investigation. In court filings, they're set to drop in early 2019. Prosecutors will begin to unveil Middle Eastern countries' attempts to influence American politics. Three sources familiar with this side of the probe told the Daily Beast. So more leaks from the prosecutors. The prosecutors that are there saying, hey, we've got more angles to this investigation. The Daily Beast says, in other words, the Russia investigation is set to go global. It's not just Russia. It's the Middle East. And were they colluding with the Trump administration? These are the big questions that need to be settled. And then this, how about this opinion piece from the USA Today? Another day, another avalanche of news about the president berating Democratic leaders on camera, unceremoniously announcing the departure of his chief of staff. And then further on, it never lets up. Trump is a ubiquitous, suffocating presence in American life. It wasn't supposed to be like this. The modern presidency is the framers' worst nightmare, a flatly unconstitutional concentration of power. As the Trump era has made abundantly clear, the office itself, its size, scope, and prominence in American life is the driving force of dysfunction in our politics. Donald Trump is the problem. You see all this going on, and it's Donald Trump who has too much power. Now, one could argue that the presidency has more power than it did in the early days of the American nation. But where was this article 3-4 years ago when Obama was making law by executive order? Where was it? And furthermore, look at all of the checks, even with the power of the presidency. It is a powerful position. But look at all of the checks. Look at whose hand is one hand anyway, is tied behind his back. He's held back by Congress. Now the House of Representatives, all of these judges that rule against him. He's going against the major media. 92% of their stories are negative. They want to take him down. And here's the USA Today saying that Donald Trump is the problem. Anything that we've covered on this program today, do you think you're going to hear it on CNN or the New York Times or the Washington Post or MSNBC? Most in America are in total darkness. They don't see the lawlessness. They don't see how the Constitution is being undermined. They don't see that this is just a naked grab at power. They won't accept the results of the election from 2 years ago. And so it's anything and everything goes. even if it means entrapping a war hero, a distinguished veteran, 33 years of service. Doesn't matter. If you can get him to make one misstatement, and if that can then trigger an investigation that might hopefully bring down the president of the United States, it will be well worth it. How did you get two agents into the White House? Oh, I just sent them. I sent them in. I probably wouldn't have gotten away with that in previous administrations. I probably couldn't have gotten away with it. But with this one, 4 days in, I did. I just sent them. I sent them. We didn't tell him anything about what we were going to do or that he could endanger himself if he made a false statement. We just went in there fishing for the false statements. We got it. He clearly lied. He clearly lied. And so now he must be punished. It's astounding. It's astounding that this is actually going on in the United States of America. But it is. And of course, we got some pretty good insight into the spirit behind it. 5, 6, 7 years ago, whenever it was that that first edition of America Under Attack came out. And then you add to that Great Again. It makes for an exciting study. Go back and look at those publications once again and be reminded of the fact that Satan is the God of this world and he knows he has but a short time. And he is bringing down the United States of America. This is why there's so much bitter division. You have these op-ed pieces going on and on about the power of the presidency. What about the power of the special counsel? Who keeps him in check? You finally have one judge that says, hey, you've got to back this up with evidence. Let me see it. Let me see what you have. Outside of that, there is no one. The president can't stop the special counsel. I didn't even mention the special counsel. The Mueller investigation. He's going against the House of Representatives, judges all over the nation, Bob Mueller and his team of left-wing prosecutors. He's got the major media. 92% of the stories are negative. This is what he has to confront every single day. Every day he goes up against this. Just bombarded with this. Nonstop. Who does Robert Mueller report to? What is it that keeps him in check? Or what is it that keeps his pit bull in check, Wiseman? What about all of these lawyers that used to serve under Hillary Clinton? Now, if they're there going aggressively after Donald Trump, are we to assume that everything's above board, everything's totally lawful? Certainly that there's no political bias involved. This has been going on for years and years. And some of the details are finally beginning to surface. But we've known it's been there for some time. We know that because of what God says. Satan really does see the United States of America as one massive target. This is Israel. This is Manasseh. This is the recipient of all the birthright blessings. Satan would love to bring down the United States of America. He's doing it. And like my father brings out, much worse is to come. From within and from without. It is sobering. Go back, though, and read those verses in Revelation 12, Ephesians 2:2, 2 Corinthians 4. And verse 4. Well, I've run out of time for anything further, but we'll have to dig into this more in the weeks ahead. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, is filed today with this deadline that Judge Sullivan gave. We'll keep our eyes on it later today and hopefully have more to report back to you on next week's programs. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.